When Francis Fitzgerald landed in Saigon in February 1966, no one was ready for her. Any woman would have been a surprise, but Fitzgerald was 25, a magna cum laude graduate of Radcliffe College, a New York City debutante whose sister was a supermodel and whose father helped direct the CIA. Fitzgerald had spent her early career as a journalist profiling celebrity men in the Big Apple. Now, she was touring Southeast Asia for a month and thought she'd write a quick magazine article to subsidize her trip. Her plane had barely landed, forced to make a quick entry between relentless mortaring from the Viet Cong. Saigon grabbed Fitzgerald by the throat. She meant to stay in Vietnam for a week. Instead, she stayed for 10 months. She didn't relay army movements, but instead focused her gaze on a people the American military so deeply misjudged. By 1972, her relentless fascination produced Fire in the Lake, a book that explored the cultural life forces of Vietnam. It was the first history of Vietnam attempted by an American, and garnered praise for its sensitivity and insight, eventually winning the Pulitzer Prize, the National Book Award, and the Bancroft Prize for History. The night she arrived, Fitzgerald went to a birthday party at the Caravelle Hotel, where journalists and embassy staff toasted champagne while rocket blasts serenaded them from outside the city. Fitzgerald watched mortar fire light up the other side of the river. It was her first introduction to the chaotic misalignment of two very different worlds. In Fitzgerald's own words, Saigon was a single lifeboat thrown into the sea for all the passengers of a sinking ocean liner, its newest expansion marked by piles of garbage, resembling less an urban quarter than a compost of villages where peasants live with their city children. Fitzgerald was a new kind of journalist in Vietnam, with particular thanks to her lack of training. And despite her elite connections, she was accustomed to being an outsider. Her parents divorced when she was young. Her dazzling socialite mother started another family with Ronald Tree, a wealthy Englishman. They had another daughter, Penelope Tree. Penelope would go on to become a supermodel, attracting the attention of John Lennon's crowd at the same time Fitzgerald came back from Vietnam flustered, exhausted, and angry. Fitzgerald studied Middle Eastern politics at Radcliffe College, Harvard's sister school when it was still an all-male university. Her roommate affectionately remembered her as a nerd. After graduating, Fitzgerald took a job at the Congress for Cultural Freedom in Paris. It was a front for the CIA, though she had no idea at the time. She tried to write a novel and failed. She returned to New York feeling like the ugly duckling caught between a sparkling socialite mother and a gorgeous teenage sister. She got assignments at the New York Herald Tribune, but the Tribune was about to shut down and she didn't have the same trajectory as her male counterparts. So she got support from Vogue and Village Voice to go to Southeast Asia and come back with a story. Fitzgerald didn't know much about war or Asia, and very few people were willing to invest in a young female reporter. She met Ward Just, a dashing reporter from the Washington Post who would take Fitzgerald on reporting trips as well as bicycle excursions, skinny dipping, and sleeping on a floating sampan on the river. Fitzgerald also fell into the orbit of Daniel Ellsberg, an intelligence officer who took her and her questions seriously. As a government employee, Ellsberg supported the war automatically, but he was intrigued by Fitzgerald's skepticism. Ellsberg would eventually change his position. He went on to leak the Pentagon Papers to Neil Sheehan and change the course of the war. Another generous teacher was Lieutenant Colonel John Paul Vann, who asked Fitzgerald a question that would haunt the rest of her work. Could anyone explain why South Vietnam's military was failing?
This turned out to be a very profound question and something that I knew I couldn't really answer at the time, but at least it directed me towards looking at the Vietnamese as opposed to looking at the American troop movement.
Fitzgerald did plenty of reporting in the field, and constant high stress wore her down. During a stint of recovery, she read Vietnam, Sociologie d'une guerre by Paul Muse, a French scholar who grew up in Hanoi and could start to explain the Confucian worldview to a Western audience. It was Muse's book that started to answer Fitzgerald's questions. She wrote a piece for The Atlantic. They were thrilled, but Fitzgerald was still unsatisfied. Next, she wrote an ambitious piece about the village of Duplap for the New York Times Magazine. She was still frustrated. In November, she left Vietnam in body, but not in spirit. When she returned to New York, she couldn't stop thinking about the war. Far from the noxious gas and blistering heat of Vietnam, ancient Killarney oaks shaded a manicured garden looking over the River Shannon. Here was Glynn Castle, full of Irish antiques and fine art, hosting glitzy parties with guests as glamorous as Mick Jagger. The castle belonged to a distant cousin of Fitzgerald's, who now offered the more intimate living quarters around back to Fitzgerald and her boyfriend, Ward Just, who also left Saigon by May 1967. They typed away in a cottage in Limerick, each trying to digest and describe their experience in Vietnam. But separate from the sufferings of war, that summer held a different kind of sorrow. In July 1967, Fitzgerald's father died. Only 57, he was struck by a heart attack on his home tennis court. Fitzgerald always felt distant from her father, and now he was gone forever. She flew home for the funeral and continued grieving when she came back to Glynn. She was distracted now from writing and from Just. He finished his book and left Glynn by September. A month later, Just surprised Fitzgerald with a letter on her birthday, informing her that he had married another woman. And yet, that same autumn held unexpected joy as well. Fitzgerald received a call from John McAllister Jr., a lecturer at Princeton, who asked her if she wanted to meet the very man who influenced her understanding of Vietnam the most, Dr. Paul Muse. Muse filled a fatherly void that felt freshly empty to Fitzgerald. Apart from her father, here was the other man who inspired her interest in Vietnam the most. Under his mentorship, Fitzgerald's book started picking up steam. Her manuscript was finished by the time she went back to Saigon in 1971. She visited again in 1973 for a final time before combat ended in 1975. In 6 years, Fitzgerald had transformed herself from a quiet, unsure, wide-eyed heiress in Saigon to one of the leading experts on Vietnamese life, politics, and society. Her work was imitated by other young reporters and dog-eared by America's top government officials. Fitzgerald's book, Fire in the Lake, was praised by academics as perhaps the most sensitive, the most ambitious, and certainly the most eloquent book ever to examine the American intervention in Vietnam against its Vietnamese historical setting.
My quest was to try and understand the really unknown subject, the Vietnamese. People would, you know, in the embassy would admit to you that they didn't understand them. And I mean, it wasn't just, I mean, a lot of them spoke Vietnamese. It didn't matter, but they just, it was a subject which really didn't come up very much. And nor did losing.
Fitzgerald dedicated the book to Paul Muse and her father.